Back at it with you midweek Wednesday, November 4th, the day after Election Day, right here on WICC in Connecticut Today. In the 3 o'clock hour, we talked about the aftermath of the apparent win by Joe Biden over President Trump with longtime state Democratic Party official Ed Marcus. 4 o'clock hour, we heard from Joe Biden. He gave a short address to tell folks what was on his mind as the votes were still being counted. And to wrap up Election Day, one of our go-to guys, starting off the 5 o'clock hour, the chair of the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Dr. Gary Rose. Former state Senate majority leader. He has an office in Brantford, longtime attorney, and also you see some of his opinions in area newspapers, including Hearst Connecticut Media, the Connecticut Post. Ed Marcus is the guest. Ed, hi. Paul here at WICC. How are you?
How are you? Happy to be with you.
Ed, thanks. Good taking the time. So what? Give me your capsulized, what did you think of last night and today? And I know from some of the stuff I've read, Ed, that you've written I know you have not been happy at how Joe Biden has been treated by some members in the Democratic Party. What are your overall thoughts?
Well, you know, I've been a Biden supporter, so we might as well get that out in the open. But last night was kind of dismaying. I never conceived of Trump doing as well as he had. But today, things are on the right track. I think Biden is clearly going to be the next president.
Is he hampered, Ed, do you think? Because I've wondered this. When he has to contend with things in the party, Ed, and you know what it is to herd cats sometime in a party, right? People saying, you know,
yes,
pack the Supreme Court, get rid of the filibuster, do this stuff. I don't think Joe Biden is so dumb, Ed, that he would think those are good ideas on the face of it. Is he hampered by those things that pop up, those, you know, those fires that he has to put out?
Oh, I don't think he's going to be hampered. I think that Joe's been around a long time. He's very experienced, very knowledgeable, and very effective. And I think he'll be able to handle it without any trouble at all. Democratic Party, they're always the factions, and you just have to deal with it.
What about what you see, Ed, now over the next maybe 2, 4, 6 years where, let's face it, Mr. Biden, after decades of public service, you know, he'll be 78 on Inauguration Day. Nancy Pelosi is up there. Steny Hoyer, the senior leadership, Ed, is really up there. Who's that next generation, and are they the traditional Democrats that you fancied yourself in for so many years, kind of the blue-collar, kind of centrist on some things, liberal, conservative on others? What do you think of the future?
Well, I think the future is bright. I think with Biden as president, the Democrats are going to be in for quite a while. I think that if Biden were not to run a second term, I expect that he will. But if he did not, I think that Kamala Harris would do an effective job.
Ed, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Ed Marcus, attorney, former chair of the Democratic State Central Committee, former state Senate majority leader. We'll talk a little about Connecticut politics coming back with Ed Marcus. Ed, hang on. Back with you in a moment. Traffic and weather together right here, 3:36 on WICC. And we welcome for a few more minutes Ed Marcus, attorney, former chair, Democratic State Central Committee here in Connecticut, former state Senate majority leader as well for a few more minutes. Ed, for all the money spent, for all the campaigning, for all the posturing here in Connecticut, not a whole lot changing. Yesterday, a seat here, a seat there, but seems to be some sort of equilibrium here in the state, particularly with the General Assembly.
excuse me. I believe that's true. But, you know, the Democrats can't really hold like 36-0 in the Senate.
Yeah.
So if they pick up a seat or two, they still have a massive majority. Marty Looney is in good shape as the leader and should have no problem in enacting whatever the governor wants.
Ed, the over the years that you participated and we've watched this, the geographic changes, though, are interesting in the state. I mean, back when you know, you were in office and very active. You know, Fairfield County, for example, where I'm chatting to you from, that was a Republican, you know, stronghold. I mean, you had a smattering of Democrats, but nowhere like it is now. I mean, things are really changing around in certain several areas of the state.
Well, it's a population shift. I think in Fairfield County, you've got a lot of New Yorkers that have moved in, and most of them are Democrats. And I think it's changed the control of the county.
So does that change actual politicking, Ed, from when you were highly involved in this? Or are there certain, you know, basics of politics, no matter whether it's, you know, digital now or just shaking hands?
There are certain basics of politics. I mean, door-to-door is still great. Digital is great. You know, going to railroad stations, all of it works.
Let's talk about Governor Ned Lamont for a second, Ed. You go back, you know, several administrations, several governors. He's getting toward now the back half, inching toward the back half of his first term. Hard-fought campaign, but he did win in 2018. What do you assess? How do you assess Ned Lamont and maybe his management style, his style with the General Assembly, something you had to deal with? Talk to me about that.
Well, I think that the governor has done a relatively good job in managing the pandemic, and that's very important. But I don't think a governor should live on executive orders because it bypasses the General Assembly, and you don't have that check and balance that you need. So as soon as he can get off of doing executive orders and deal with the legislature, I think that is the best way for the state to go.
Yeah, Ed, and it's true that you just said that, and even a lot of Republicans are saying that, and you know, we understand, I guess you and I do, Ed, that in times of medical emergencies, yeah, there are things you have to do quickly, but, you know, we do elect men and women to kind of, you know, keep a wary eye over this stuff.
Right, and you need that balance. So hopefully going into the next session, the governor will be more inclined to work with the legislature.
The state, Ed Marcus, is going to face, because of COVID and because of, you know, stresses, stuff obviously you dealt with, you know, legacy costs and pensions and all this stuff, the next 3 or 4 years could get a little dicey money-wise, and there's another state workers' contract coming up, more negotiations there. I guess they're going to get serious June, July, maybe August of the coming year. If you were in the General Assembly and maybe talking to the governor's office, what advice would you give them?
Well, my advice would be to be forthcoming, be transparent, and if you have to be tough with the unions, then do so. You know, your first duty is to the people of the state, not to the politics of the state.
So that's interesting. So maybe we might see, because that's a big question, Ed, that I've asked people about in Hartford right now, and they just don't know. I mean, for example, you know, I guess the governor, it will be unbound, as it were, this coming July when the last no layoff guarantee, the Governor Malloy signed with CBAC expires. So you wouldn't be averse to him playing hardball then?
Sometimes I believe you have to. It's the only way to get things done.
Despite the relative strength that the state unions have?
Well, that doesn't mean that you try to crush them. It means you try to work with them. But it also doesn't mean that you crumble and do whatever they want.
Are people involved?
I think the right word is you have to be able to negotiate.
Yeah, it's basic. Ed Marcus, are people involved in politics enough these days? I mean, we have all these information sources now, digital. I mean, stuff that when you and I were growing up, we forget it. We didn't even dream of it. It was sci-fi. But with all this, are there still people, maybe, Ed, not informed enough? I mean, I was saying yesterday on all our election coverage, pay attention to the General Assembly. You know, these are the people, these are the men and women who really affect you on an everyday basis. Do you think enough people realize that or not?
I don't think they do. I think it's an ongoing task to educate the public.
Let me get back to, as we wrap up here in just a couple of minutes, the whole national scenario. Joe Biden, let's say he takes office, but let's say things stay, Ed, as they are. Democrats controlling the House, but Mitch McConnell controls the Senate, obviously, and him being the majority leader, if the Republicans hold the Senate, he and Joe Biden are going to have to talk a lot, maybe bang heads. What do you see happening there? I mean, do you think Mitch McConnell will hamstring the Biden White House for 2 years and then put all his chips on the table for the midterms?
I don't think so. I think that Mitch McConnell knows Joe Biden. They've dealt with each other for years. Joe has a way of working with the other side of the aisle, and I think he'll be able to handle McConnell and actually get things accomplished.
If Ed Margus was standing in front of a college class right now, Ed, and somebody says, Mr. Margus, they raise their hand and you point to him, you say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, why should I get involved in politics? You would tell them, Ed Margus, what?
I would tell them that your whole life is dependent on what happens politically. So get involved. Don't complain about it. Be part of it.
I like that. I always say that, Ed. Stop complaining if you vote for the same person, or don't do a little research, right? It never hurts, right, Ed?
Right.
Ed Margus, attorney, former chair of the State Democratic Central Committee and a former state Senate majority leader, his office in Brantford. Ed, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Take care. We'll talk down the line. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ed. Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Yep, there's a name in Connecticut politics that goes back decades, Ed Margus.
A brief statement, and I'm sure we'll have more to say later, and either tonight or tomorrow. But let me begin by thanking the press for being here and thanking everyone else. My fellow Americans, yesterday once again proved that democracy is the heartbeat of this nation. Just as it has been the heartbeat of this nation for two centuries. And even in the face of a pandemic, more Americans voted this election than ever before in American history. Over 150 million people cast their votes. I think that's just extraordinary. And if we had any doubts, we shouldn't have any longer about a government of, by, and for the people. It's very much alive in America. Here, the people rule. Power can't be taken or asserted. It flows from the people. And it's their will that determines who will be the president of the United States and their will alone. And now, after a long night of counting, it's clear that we're winning enough states to reach 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency. I'm not here to declare that we've won. But I am here to report, when the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners. With all the votes counted, we have won Wisconsin by 20,000 votes, virtually the same margin that President Trump won that state 4 years ago. In Michigan, we lead by over 35,000 votes, and it's growing. A substantially bigger margin and President Trump won Michigan in 2016. Michigan will complete its vote soon, maybe as early as today. And I feel very good about Pennsylvania. Virtually all the remaining ballots to be counted were cast by mail. And we've been winning 78% of the votes by mail in Pennsylvania. We've flipped Arizona and the 2nd District of Nebraska. Of special significance to me is that we've won with the majority of the American people. And every indication is that the majority will grow. We have a popular vote lead of nearly 3 million votes, and every indication is that will grow as well. Indeed, Senator Harris and I are on track to win more votes than any ticket in the history of this country that ever won the presidency and vice presidency. over 70 million votes. I'm very proud of our campaign. Only three presidential campaigns in the past have defeated an incumbent president. When it's finished, God willing, we'll be the fourth. This is a major achievement. This is a major achievement. And it's been a long and difficult campaign, but it's been a more difficult time for our country, a hard time. We've had hard campaigns before. We've faced hard times before. So once this election is finalized and behind us, it'll be time for us to do what we've always done as Americans, to put the harsh rhetoric of the campaign behind us, to lower the temperature, to see each other again, to listen to one another, to hear each other again, and respect and care for one another, to unite, to heal, to come together as a nation. I know this won't be easy. I'm not naive. Neither of us are. I know how deep and hard the opposing views are in our country on so many things. But I also know this as well. To make progress, we have to stop treating our opponents as enemies. We are not enemies. What brings us together as Americans is so much stronger than anything that can tear us apart. So let me be clear. We are campaigning as Democrats, but I will govern as an American president. The presidency itself is not a partisan institution. It's the one office in this nation that represents everyone. And it demands a duty of care for all Americans. And that is precisely what I will do. I will work as hard for those who didn't vote for me as I will for those who did vote for me. Now, every vote must be counted. No one's going to take our democracy away from us. Not now, not ever. America's come too far. America's fought too many battles. America's endured too much to ever let that happen. We, the people, will not be silenced. We, the people, will not be bullied. We, the people, will not surrender. My friends, I'm confident we'll emerge victorious. But this will not be my victory alone or our victory alone. It'll be a victory for the American people, for our democracy, for America. And there will be no blue states and red states when we win, just the United States of America. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops.
Old buddy, Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the government department, poli-sci and all that, Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Gary?
Hey, Paul, how are you? I know.
Man, this is, you've got like a semester's worth of stuff in like 2 days for your students, man.
Oh, I'm ready to go.
Look at you. You're like me. We just love this stuff, huh? Oh, man. All right, well, what did you think of the, the numbers are still coming in, but I guess, Gary, this was not this blue tsunami everybody thought.
Absolutely not. It does look as if Joe Biden is going to win this race, at least today, as right this very moment, as you and I speak, it looks that way. Yet at the same time, it's obvious that the ground game of President Trump was very effective in mobilizing not just, you know, the base that he had in 2016, but he obviously brought some new voters to the polls, too, in states that were supposedly clearly in Biden's column. And that was the strategy of the Trump campaign, was to mobilize essentially the same types of individuals you know, who voted for him in 16 but did not vote. And apparently he's done a very good job of getting a good number of white working class people to the polls who not only supported him initially, but maybe who were reluctant to vote in 16 and didn't vote in 18. So all those rallies that he has been holding in the Rust Belt, obviously, you know, are paid off. But at the same time, it does appear, though, that Wisconsin and Michigan are being called now for Biden, at least the last time I looked. Let's put it that way.
You know, Gary, I just have to laugh, and you probably have to giggle at this, too. You know, we see so many people. Now, obviously, a lot of liberals can't stand Trump, Democrats, but I look at the Republican side and I see these, you know, these grifters who call themselves the Lincoln Project and, you know, all the chattering talking heads, which are basically ex-Bush and McCain aides. Yeah. And Gary, you know what? Well, number one, I always say they're mad because Trump took away all their consulting gigs. But number two, just the stuff you mentioned and the way he's even picked up a little bit with black and Hispanic voters, I'll bet you privately all these, you know, Republicans who quote unquote, oh, we can't stand the guy, wink, wink, they've got to be, Gary, behind closed doors going, son of a gun, he pulls this off, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, a lot of that was posturing. There's no doubt about it. There are some legitimate, Republicans who, and they're good, solid Republicans who do not like the Trump presidency, largely because they are establishment Republicans.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Gary, he takes chances. I don't think they have the guts to.
No, that's right. They probably, behind closed doors, like you say, Paul, admire just how bold and unrestricted this individual is when it comes to making decisions and governing. And, you know, most of them are so used to business as usual and, you know, deliberative meetings and all of that and working, you know, on committees and things like that. And, you know, that's where they spend their life, some of these people. And here's Trump, he, you know, outsider, no political experience ever before, comes in as a real estate mogul and just really shakes things up. So you got to, you know, whether you agree with the policies or not, you know, in many ways, Trump has personified, you know, just what American democracy is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be for the people. It's supposed to be open. It's not supposed to be for a ruling class. And he came in, you know, on his own down that escalator, and I know his campaign has been filled with controversies and his presidency too, but at the same time, it shows just in many ways, you know, I know you have to have money obviously to do it, but Hillary outspent him tremendously in 16, but it shows that, you know, sometimes you don't always have to be part of the so-called deep state and the establishment to rise to the top. And Trump has demonstrated that.
And, you know, Gary, you know, maybe in 2024, you know, somebody is going to try and do this. I mean, people have talked about, you know, Mark Cuban or The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. I mean, somebody is going to say, well, wait a minute. Trump did it. I've got a wider appeal than him. Why the hell not? Right.
Yeah, right. Well, you wonder if now, you know, this is the model. The model is, and you know, and by the way, if Trump loses, you know, there is the prospect of him trying to run again.
Oh, you can know, you imagine?
Let's not forget Grover Cleveland, you know, who did win two non-consecutive terms. And so, but I would never predict anything about Donald Trump. Who knows? But nevertheless, this might be the model. Yeah. The businessman, you know, who has made a fortune, you know, and decides to enter the political arena to apply business principles, and who is totally not at all in awe of people who have seniority in government. Maybe it is. But on the other hand, you know, the individuals you mentioned, like The Rock and Cuban, quite frankly, I've heard that before, but there really is only one Donald Trump at the same time. You know, I don't know if anybody can actually emulate what we have observed here.
We'll see. 5:14, it's Gary Rose with the Sacred Heart University. So, Gary, now let's assume that Mr. Biden does ascend to the presidency. It looks, as we speak right now, that the Republicans will hold the Senate. So is next to Mr. Biden, is Mitch McConnell now the most powerful person in D.C.?
Sure. And that is the firewall for the Republican Party right there is the U.S. Senate with Mitch McConnell, as you say, is the majority leader. And he, you know, that's going to force Biden, I think, if he really wants to have a successful legislative agenda, as all presidents want to have, he's going to have to obviously not kowtow to the far progressive, you know, left-wing base of his party, but rather he's going to have to, if he wants to get legislation passed in a number of areas, it's going to have to obviously please to some extent and, you know, accommodate some of the interests of the Republicans in the Senate. And so I am sure that if in fact the Republicans do hold on to the Senate, and as you say, it kind of looks that way, I'm sure that the progressives on the in the Democratic Party are going to be really upset about that because that's going to force Biden to really govern as more of a moderate, I think, and, which he claims to be.
Yeah, and when you look at his record, I mean, yeah, the guy was not a flaming lefty. I mean, he was Mr. Backslapper, Delaware, yep. PA, union guy. I love Amtrak, you know, whatever. Maybe that's something he can do, you know, free ride Friday on Amtrak because he loves the thing so much. Connecticut, Gary, no real surprises. You know, a couple of seats here and there in the state house, state senate, although... for the $1.6 million she spent, Margaret Stryker did a little bit better. And that 5th District race with Johanna Hayes and David Sullivan, that was interesting for a while.
Yeah, that was. And it was close. And you know, I was watching that. Of course, I live in the 5th District. And Sullivan, he actually had done, I felt, a pretty good job, even though he was so outspent by her. Nevertheless, he did a pretty good job of defining Congresswoman Hayes as a, as really, if you will, he tried to present her as a socialist and one who runs with the squad and has no respect for law and order. And, you know, that's obviously not true. I mean, her husband's a police officer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he did present her in a way and defined her, I think, that gave a lot of voters some pause, you know, about her. And despite not having a lot of resources, I thought his campaign was pretty really successful in the way that he was defining Congresswoman Johanna Hayes. Yeah, he was. He was pretty good at doing that.
Yeah. So, Gary, thank you. We appreciate the time, and we'll be looking down the road here. We'll talk in a couple of weeks when I guess we start talking inauguration, unless President Trump won't, unless he will barricade himself inside... inside the Oval Office and won't come out.
Well, now the question is, you know, if he does in fact lose, will he go to the inauguration?
Yeah, I can see him just,
I mean. that's hard to tell.
Yeah,
he decided not to go to.
Oh, really? Oh, so it has happened before. No, you know what he'll do, Gary? He'll have a rally down the street. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. Can you a MAGA rally?
He could.
Oh, God. Gary Rose. Gary, thank you. Be good. We'll talk, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Okay.
Thanks.
Right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Dr. Gary Rose.